From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
Frankenstein by Mary Shelley is this month's book. Mary Shelley's gothic masterpiece, Frankenstein, is a book everyone knows. Even if you haven't read it, and a surprising number of us read it at school, the plot is one of the staples of English fiction. Driven by arrogance, the scientist, Dr. Frankenstein, assembles a creature from human body parts, giving it life, only to reject it when it displays a too human frailty. The monster flees, is pursued, and wreaks a terrible revenge on its creator. Written by the teenage Mary Shelley in 1816, the novel was initially intended as a short story contained in chapter 5 of the book, and was reputedly the result of a nightmare and an evening spent telling ghost stories with her husband and some friends. It was published anonymously 2 years later and was a sensation in London, where it was adapted for the stage.
The day of my departure at length arrived. Clerval spent the last evening with us. He had endeavoured to persuade his father to permit him to accompany me and to become my fellow student, but in vain. His father was a narrow-minded trader, and saw idleness and ruin in the aspirations and ambition of his son. Henry deeply felt the misfortune of being debarred from a liberal education. He said little, but when he spoke, I read in his kindling eye and in his animated glance a restrained but firm resolve not to be chained to the miserable details of commerce. We sat late. We could not tear ourselves away from each other, nor persuade ourselves to say the word farewell. It was said, and we retired under the pretense of seeking repose, each fancying that the other was deceived. But when at morning's dawn I descended to the carriage which was to convey me away, they were all there, my father again to bless me, Clerval to press my hand once more, my Elizabeth to renew her entreaties that I would write often, and to bestow the last feminine attentions on her playmate and friend. I threw myself into the chaise that was to convey me away, and indulged in the most melancholy reflections. I, who had ever been surrounded by amiable companions, continually engaged in endeavouring to bestow mutual pleasure, I was now alone. In the university whither I was going, I must form my own friends and be my own protector. My life had hitherto been remarkably secluded and domestic, and this had given me invincible repugnance to new countenances. I loved my brothers, Elizabeth and Clerval. These were old, familiar faces, but I believed myself totally unfitted for the company of strangers. Such were my reflections as I commenced my journey, but as I proceeded my spirits and hopes rose. I ardently desired the acquisition of knowledge. I had often, when at home, thought it hard to remain during my youth cooped up in one place, and had longed to enter the world and take my station among other human beings. Now my desires were complied with, and it would, indeed, have been folly to repent. I had sufficient leisure for these and many other reflections during my journey to Ingolstadt, which was long and fatiguing. At length the high white steeple of the town met my eyes. I alighted and was conducted to my solitary apartment to spend the evening as I pleased. The next morning I delivered my letters of introduction and paid a visit to some of the principal professors. Chance, or rather the evil influence, the angel of destruction, which asserted omnipotent sway over me from the moment I turned my reluctant steps from my father's door, led me first to Monsieur Krempe, professor of natural philosophy. He was an uncouth man, but deeply imbued in the secrets of his science. He asked me several questions concerning my progress in the different branches of science appertaining to natural philosophy. I replied carelessly, and partly in contempt, mentioned the names of my alchemists as the principal authors I had studied. The professor stared. "Have you," he said, "really spent your time in studying such nonsense?" I replied in the affirmative. "Every minute," continued Monsieur Krempe with warmth, "every instant that you have wasted on those books is utterly and entirely lost. You have burdened your memory with exploded systems and useless names. Good God! In what desert land have you lived, where no one was kind enough to inform you that these fancies which you have so greedily imbibed are 1,000 years old, and as musty as they are ancient? I little expected in this enlightened and scientific age to find a disciple of Albertus Magnus and Paracelsus. My dear sir, you must begin your studies entirely anew."
The basic premise behind Frankenstein, the creation, rejection, and destruction of the creator, has become a staple of fiction, and it earned Mary Shelley the accolade Mother of the Horror Story. It can also be argued Frankenstein is one of the earliest examples of science fiction, something fans have argued over for many years now. It has been adapted, filmed, televised, and rendered in comic book form over the last 200 years, sometimes faithfully, but often with no more than a nod to the original. The filmmaker Hammer Horror produced a series of movies featuring Peter Cushing in the title role, ranging from Curse of Frankenstein in 1957, all the way to Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell in 1974. Only Christopher Lee as Dracula has more. There is even a rather wonderful children's book, Frankenstein's Cat, by the illustrator Curtis Jobling.
London was our present point of rest. We determined to remain several months in this wonderful and celebrated city. Clerval desired the intercourse of the men of genius and talent who flourished at this time, but this was with me a secondary object. I was principally occupied with the means of obtaining the information necessary for the completion of my promise, and quickly availed myself of the letters of introduction that I had brought with me, addressed to the most distinguished natural philosophers. If this journey had taken place during my days of study and happiness, it would have afforded me inexpressible pleasure. But a blight had come over my existence, and I only visited these people for the sake of the information they might give me on the subject in which my interest was so terribly profound. Company was irksome to me. When alone, I could fill my mind with the sights of heaven and earth. The voice of Henry soothed me, and I could thus cheat myself into a transitory peace. But busy, uninteresting, joyous faces brought back despair to my heart. I saw an insurmountable barrier placed between me and my fellow men. This barrier was sealed with the blood of William and Justine, and to reflect on the events connected with those names filled my soul with anguish. But in Clerval I saw the image of my former self. He was inquisitive and anxious to gain experience and instruction. The difference of manners that he observed was to him an inexhaustible source of instruction and amusement. He was also pursuing an object he had long had in view. His design was to visit India, in the belief that he had in his knowledge of its various languages, and in the views he had taken of its society, the means of materially assisting the progress of European colonization and trade. In Britain only could he further the execution of his plan. He was forever busy, and the only check to his enjoyments was my sorrowful and dejected mind. I tried to conceal this as much as possible, that I might not debar him from the pleasures natural to one who was entering on a new scene of life, undisturbed by any care or bitter recollection. I often refused to accompany him, alleging another engagement, that I might remain alone. I now also began to collect the materials necessary for my new creation. And this was to me like the torture of single drops of water continually falling on the head. Every thought that was devoted to it was an extreme anguish, and every word that I spoke in allusion to it caused my lips to quiver and my heart to palpitate.
The monster so vividly portrayed by Shelley is with us in more contemporary films too. The Terminator, for example, can be viewed as a 20th century monster turning against its human creators. What Shelley did so wonderfully in the original, however, was to make the monster human, perhaps more human than the scientist who created him. It shows we have responsibility for our work, whatever it is. And Dr. Frankenstein, having made such a deformed creature and given it life, fails in this responsibility. Frankenstein is one of the great original tales, along with Bram Stoker's Dracula and Stevenson's Jekyll and Hyde. A whole industry has been built on these stories, and our literature would be much poorer without them. Despite celebrating its 200th anniversary this year, the writing is still accessible and carries the reader along as well as any modern work. It is short by contemporary standards, but the strength of the characters and the fate of the creature will stay with the reader long after the book ends.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334 or visit our website at parkvillecarecentre.com. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Here are some handy tips and information regarding your hospital bedside TV, radio and phone service. TV channels 1 to 5 are free to use at certain times every day, so check your screen for details. To help you keep in touch with friends and loved ones, outgoing calls are also free all day, every day, to landline numbers that begin with 01, 02 or 03. Radio channels can be listened to absolutely free at any time of day. If you would like to access a paid service, such as our wide range of TV channels, Sky Sports, our great range of films, or just need a little internet access, then you'll need to buy a bundle. Buying a longer stay bundle would give you the best value for money, so try to buy a bundle to suit your maximum length of stay. If you pay for a TV service with your debit or credit card and happen to leave the hospital earlier than expected, then just contact our customer care team from your bedside phone. They may be able to downgrade your bundle to a shorter duration and give you a partial refund. To find out more about bedside entertainment services and find a bundle to suit your needs, just pick up the bedside phone and speak to the friendly Hospedia customer care team. They'll help you find the best deal. And remember, to contact Hospital Radio, just pick up the phone and dial star 800.
offering prestigious accommodation, ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualifying nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs. A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare. To find out more, please telephone 01642 308188 or visit our website rosevillecarecentre.com. Roseville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.
Absolutely right. And we welcome, of course, Rob Nichols to the programme. How are you, Rob?
Okay, how are you doing?
Excellent. Wonderful. I know all sorts of words. And, yeah, of course, we have the wonderful Rosemary Stannard with us as well. How are you, Rosemary?
I'm fine today, thank you.
Excellent. Your annual visit up north.
Yes, I love
very,
it.
Very important. And online, joining us as an ACE undergraduate, soon to be postgraduate, of course, and possibly going into the publishing industry, although you're quite right, Jenny, I had no indication in terms of what she was actually working on, because I just clearly haven't been paying attention. We've got the wonderful Claire Margerison. How are you, Claire?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Claire, we'll come to you first, because you've been patiently listening to the whole programme, and I know there was a rumour that says, well, because sometimes we do have the original authors on, and Jenny was a bit concerned, oh, see, had we really got in touch with Mary Shelley? Maybe it's a reincarnated version of Mary Shelley. But share with us your own experiences of the novel Frankenstein.
Well, basically, I studied the play back in secondary school. I remember we had to watch the film as well, and it really scared me. I don't know why, but 12-year-old Claire sensibilities were clearly too delicate for such horror. But we're actually studying it at the moment for Georgian Literature this year. But it's always been something I've been very aware of. I think Frankenstein is just such a potent story. And, you know, some people always get confused between Victor Frankenstein and the monster, and everyone knows the cultural references. And it's just so powerful, and it just shows how stories can really emanate and resonate throughout culture.
Rosemary, you, of course, also studied it at school.
A-level.
A-level, exactly. What were your thoughts on the text itself?
A-level was a long time ago.
No.
But I did Frankenstein along with three other Gothic novels. I don't remember the other Gothic novels, but I do remember Frankenstein.
Which is interesting in its own way. And Rob Nichols. I didn't study Frankenstein at all in any way, shape or form.
No, I didn't.
Obviously, they had other things to do in Middlesbrough at the time. What were your thoughts on the novel, having read through it?
Mm. I love the opening is fantastic, the way that they're set up and on board the ship to through the Arctic wastes, somebody else who's obsessed, and then they're pulling they see this strange figure, and then going across the ice, and then this character is almost dead, coming on board the ship and telling his story. It's a fantastic opening to what is a story that's persisted, hasn't it? And it's incredible when you think of the circumstances that it was written in, when Mary Shelley showed all the lads how to do something really that sort of as phenomenal as they all were, her story is remembered more than anything that else that was written in that house.
I must admit, I do like that in many ways. We could have Frankenstein, the Modern Prometheus, also Mary Shelley shows the lads.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the lads, of course, being Byron and Percy Shelley.
Yeah.
The lads, yeah. Jenny, again, from your own perspective, as I said, you'd studied it from that point of view. Did it also resonate with yourself, having returned to it for the Book of the Month this time?
Actually, it did. It was more accessible than I thought it would be. And it was lovely to go back to the original text. There are a lot of cultural references. It is still used in so many different things. But to go back to that very pure form and to read that story, it's such a powerful and such a simple story. But she does give all the characters so much humanity. You can't help feeling so sad for everybody, because nobody wins in this story.
I found it remarkably contemporary, allowing for the fact it's celebrating its bicentenary this year.
Yes, it's remarkable.
I mean, it still carries with it. I mean, even in terms of the text, although clearly written in an age pre-typewriter, let alone, you know, word processor and so on. And in fact, there are critics who would say it was a better time then, because you could really craft over your words, etc. You didn't actually sort of just churn stuff out. But it does kind of carry with it the notions of rejection, the notions of being human, the notions of how you relate to others. And we see in the journey that the creation actually takes, that whole passage. I mean, for me, the most poignant moment had to be the time just before it all ends in tragedy, and he is looking in on the displaced French people in the village cottage, which again is alluded to in the movie. And I think obviously several movies have all touched base on this and looked at that. But I thought that in particular was a moment where clearly that was the time where, in essence, you could say it's not nature versus nurture. It's a case of upbringing. It's how people relate. It's how people react. And perhaps, you know, even now we talk about the migrant crisis, the migrant population. That sense of the other is very much writ large. Did you get that, Rob, in terms of the way the text was actually being developed?
Yeah, absolutely. Never judge a book by its cover or whatever. The fact that the guy... that the older man in the cottage
is visually impaired.
Yes, so he can relate to him. Yeah. But as soon as somebody sees the monster, as he's always referred to, there's incredible reaction against him, as there is with everybody.
One of the aspects which for me was quite powerful was the sense that, again, unlike the cinematic incarnations, which most of us are familiar with, the Colin Clive incarnation of It's Alive and the Lightning and Peter Cushing and all of the material from that, the only real reference to lightning that we see within this is clearly the lightning that destroys the tree.
Yes.
And that sort of spark of life that ultimately will destroy the family, destroy Frankenstein, which again opens up from that. Claire, were there any particular passages from your own perspective? I mean, I do want to sort of put post-traumatic stress disorder as a 12-year-old child being sort of, you know, totally stressed by this. But anything that kind of, you know, related to you? I mean, you mentioned you're studying Gothic horror from that perspective. Was this something which, you know, again, you think this particularly sort of worked for your good self? Or did it actually sort of cause you to kind of, you know, as all good literature perhaps should, take a little reflection on our own experiences and your own personal experiences?
Well, I found it kind of interesting in terms of the idea of sensibility and empathy, because obviously one of the things we do when we read stories about people is we empathise. And I found it quite interesting that Shelley takes a character that you're not necessarily meant to empathise or not empathise with. You're meant to sort of explore how that makes you feel and how he makes you feel. And I think that's really powerful in terms of, like, a powerful way to reflect on yourself. Rather than having... I mean, we were talking on the midweek drive back in Lincoln about hero versus villain. Well, here you have a character. Well, you have two characters. You have Victor Frankenstein and the monster, who are both extremely complex and extremely... conflicted characters that you can't help but feel sorry for the monster, even though certain ways he acts aren't exactly the nicest. I just find it very, very interesting to see how it affects people emotionally, especially because of the time it was written and people were so concerned with, like, feelings and how we feel.
And again, looking towards that, you've clearly got the elements of, you had the French Revolution that had taken place. You've got a lot of concerns that were happening on that scenario. It's interesting, again, in terms of the travel. There's nearly no sense that using the boats is any longer than it currently takes, really, to cross over from Switzerland to Germany and indeed to the... In fact, Scotland doesn't really get featured in many of the adaptations, does it? And it's a key part, you know, it is possibly understandably, you might well say. However, any other points you'd like to raise, Rob, about your experience? I mean, was this the first time you'd actually read the novel as a novel as opposed to seeing the screenplay?
I think it was. I thought I'd read it before. Mm. I knew. I remember reading Dracula. I thought, but I obviously hadn't. No, obviously the many adaptations, some of them are so removed from the book, aren't they? Completely. castle and...
It was a point I was going to raise with respect to Jenny, because clearly Alex Hastings, I mean, if somebody did an adaptation with respect to that in which, you know, they changed it as much as, say, Frankenstein's been adapted, it's almost unrecognisable, isn't it, really, in terms of intellectual property and so on?
It's not going to happen because I hold the film rights.
Yeah, see, there we are. Mary Shelley's looking down, I think, darn it, I should have signed them up. But still, never mind. That's a classic routine. Okay, it's brought us neatly around to the... Well, I mean, how can we quantify this in any ways? But we're going to attempt to, aren't we? So let's go with yourself, Rosemary, first of all. What's marks out of 10 for Frankenstein?
It's a good novel, I recommend it. It stood the test of time in that it's even university challenge questions 200 years after.
If it's a university challenge question,
so I would say 10.
10? Mm. Right, okay. Rob?
I'll go 9.
Yeah, okay. Claire?
Yeah, I think I'd go 9 too. It's the sort of book that you read, you hear about, and you don't necessarily pick up and read, and I think everybody should pick up and read. It's very well written.
I'm going to go with Rosemary. I'm going to go for a 10 because I think it's been so influential, and you know, as folk who've actually sort of endured a science fiction module in the third year of their English courses would actually attest to, I kind of share
Brian. I do.
Well, I share Brian Aldous's view that I think it did actually fire off, as you alluded to in your criticism and critique, Jenny. It fired off the whole sort of science fictional, well, as we understand it today, as opposed to science fantasy, which again a different one. And Jenny, you're in mark.
I'm going to give it 9 because she did take the idea from the Golem.
That is a fair point, but you know, she did show the lads how to do it.
She did. She did good things with it.
So there we are. And next month, Jenny, the book of the month is
Tom Clancy's Red Storm Rising.
All connect together. Claire, thank you for joining us. Hopefully you'll be able to join us for a book of the month in the studio before too long. And just to actually put flesh on the bones, which publishing company have you been working for busily?
Icon Books.
Icon Books, there we are.
I'm actually doing work for them as we speak.
Do you see? Multitasking. That's the kind of quality we like to sort of work through on that whole basis. It's truly, genuinely, wonderfully splendid. We haven't really got a slogan for book of the month, have we? Like, sort of, should we just say keep reading?
Keep reading.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 225
grams of magnesium, 3 resorbs of calcium. Hang on, slow down.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, that's the recipe.
Oh, if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York, and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.